When the Canucks miss the playoffs again.
When Jim Benning trades away all our picks.
When Goldalbin is scratched for the third game in a row.
C4 is there.
With Sedin-like vision, Horvat's work ethic, and Petey's electric personality.
Here comes the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast.
With Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Powered by Overtime Media.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast. I am Chris at Lightforce, the familiar voice you've missed the last few weeks as I've left things in the hands of Matt Lee at Matt Lee underscore 61, who happens to be here, producer unextraordinaire.
Hi.
It's just you and I here. Missing in action is Anna at A4603. She is going to the hockey game tonight. We record on Mondays. You listen on Tuesdays. And she chose Canucks hockey over the likes of you and I.
So she chose Canucks hockey over the Canucks hockey podcast.
Right. I mean, and we record at such a time that it would have allowed her to be here and then run down to the game. It's not like we're that far away from the arena.
All I'm going to say is we have exactly 45 minutes max for us to crank this out because Daddy's got to go home and watch Legends Night at Rogers Arena.
Yeah, Legends Night, huh? You're not I love PVR in it?
I am PVRing it. I am PVRing Hockey Central beforehand and PVRing the game so I can not miss a single moment of the action. Yeah. Because in the words of Steve Tyler, I don't want to miss a thing.
Yeah, y'all missed out on Mr. I Think I Can Sing here. Don't do it. You don't want to do
right,
it.
Right, right.
Also missing is Adam Ovenel Carter at Adam FOC. He told us he'll be here next week. Problem is, no show.
Great.
Like, it's a holiday. It's a holiday Monday. We won't be here next week because we can't get into the studio to record. And as we normally do, we take that week off. But amazing, Adam says he's available.
So let's get this straight. The dude's been here for what? Maybe count on your hand how many times he's been on for the show this season. And he literally tells us the 11th hour, I'm available next week. Well, great. We're not here next week. So you'll be the only one.
Standing outside because he can't get in.
It's good to know that he's there for us when we need him the most. Yeah.
The same thoughts of Adam Ovenel Carter lost to the depths of time.
Yeah. We will talk about the Vancouver Canucks this episode, Chris. We'll talk about the Sedins. Well, a bit of a career retrospective, if you will, right? Because you and I have literally watched the Sedins from the start of their careers to the end of their careers. So I think it's good that it's you and I. Because we have been here for the whole shebang, if you will.
Oh yeah,
the whole meal deal.
Yeah, you were about yay tall when they first started playing.
Dude,
hockey.
I was 12 years old when That's they right. started playing.
Yay tall.
12 years old. I'm a little taller than that back then, but I was 12 years old.
Yeah,
old enough to criticize them in the early 2000s.
Yeah,
that's right. The hashtag analysis was out back in the early 2000s for me.
Hmm.
So we'll talk about the Sedins, like the pivotal moments, if you will, the moments that define their careers. We'll talk about the whole proceedings that are following this week for the Vancouver Canucks in the lead-up towards Sedin Week. We'll talk about the injury bug, which has apparently bitten the Vancouver Canucks hard and fast.
I blame you and Anna.
What?
You guys cursed them last two
episodes.
How did
I curse them?
The last two episodes, you're like, what are the three reasons this team doesn't make the playoffs?
I did say that.
And one of those reasons.
Okay, but we knew, come on. Like, we knew that the injuries were going to happen at some point.
Nuh-uh.
There was no way this team was going to make it through from start to finish without some sort of critical injury. It's just not the Canuck way.
Mm-hmm. Says Iron Man Matt Lee and Iron Woman Anna Forsythe, who apparently never get sick.
Have I been sick? When is the last time I've been sick? You've been sick. You were sick last week.
Yeah. Try to bring a 2.5-year-old.
By the way, are you still sick?
Life. No. I might sound like it, but I'm well over it. I had lost my voice. I actually
No, the dulcet tones of your voice sound as sexy as ever.
I was going through puberty again. Like, my voice would crack, you know, like the, and so baby four, she'd be like, Daddy sounds funny.
She's smart. That's Harvard material type of analysis from Baby Force.
Anyhow, I am better now.
I'm glad to hear it. So we're going to talk about all those things coming up next on the C4 podcast, CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
So you didn't give me an opportunity to talk about it, but I haven't been here the last couple of weeks.
Right.
You did mention it, though.
I bungled it a couple times, maybe.
So there is an old school, like we're talking OG style, Canucks tweet up happening the end of this month, end of February. So this all came to be after, you know, the fact that we were going through these different eras and there was a retro night, and I had made a comment like, hey, you know what we need one of those old school organic, you know, from the ground up Canucks tweet ups, not the ones that sort of became corporate when the team really got behind them. And lots of people like, yeah, we totally need to do this. So I, you know, leaned on Anna to get me in touch with Jagers, and sure as heck, that's where we're going to do it. And we're doing it on February 29th. It's an afternoon game against the Leafs, so it's like easy to get downtown to come and watch the Vancouver Canucks play. And it's going to be a whole lot of us. I mean, it's those that listen to the C4 podcast. It's going to be those that follow me on Twitter. We're talking some real OG people. Like, there's people that I have not talked to probably since the last Canucks tweet up. And I can't even remember when the last Vancouver
The last
Canucks
time there was a Canucks tweet up, like, the Canucks were competitive all over again.
Yeah, it's been a
was
long
Ryan
time.
Was Ryan Kesler on the team?
Gosh, probably. I mean, it's been a long
That's a
time.
Long ass time.
But again,
can I say that? I don't even know.
I don't know. Well, you did, and it's done. But no, it's Jagers, Feb 29. Come on down. We got the back room. I'm hoping the back room is the right about size for the collection of people.
Either that or Magic the Gathering is going to have to get moved over again.
Nah, that's Monday night. That's why we didn't do a Monday night. They got precedence.
Can just smell the nerd coming off of them.
Yeah. Anyhow, hope to see y'all there.
Yeah. I'm excited to be there as well. I will be there with you on Saturday, February 29th. I know you've got like a long, like, few days before and after, but
you don't have
to digress about it. But we will all be there. I know Anna expects to be there. Adam, he might be there, or he might be there the week after for Magic the Gathering.
Yeah. Adam will be there in March. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's exciting that we're, that you're hosting this, and, we're definitely excited to see a lot of our listeners and a lot of the people that have responded on Twitter. And I know that there has been a very strong response on Twitter so far.
Yeah. And that's actually what really gets me most excited, is that this is something that, you know, people have an appetite for, and I'm hoping sort of the organic, like low key, just a bunch of people having a good time watching a little Canucks hockey against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, I think we you know, we did this right. So it's going to be pretty cool. Who knows? Maybe Matt will be there in his C4 hockey podcast shirt, you know? Proud company man.
If I can dig it, it's in the laundry. Wear it often, so.
Cool. So anyhow, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the world of the Vancouver Canucks. Is there anything special?
Oh, it's just one of the biggest weeks in Canuck history. I think someone pointed this out, I think it was on Reddit, but this could be the last jersey retirement we see for many, many years.
Well, based on the era of play, the next potential retirement...
Luongo?
No, Roberto...
We can have that discussion Luongo, again.
Luongo, I mean, whether or not he deserves to have his jersey retired is a different story, but it won't be, right? Like, them retiring his jersey would be the Canucks... Luongo going up there is the same as Burray going up there.
Let's... look at it this way. I'll see you back here in 15, 20 years when Elias Pettersson's
Well, no, and that's
there.
What I was going to say. It's the current era. It would be a Petey. It would be a Hughes. It would be a Horvat, maybe. I mean, like, I'm not suggesting that that's going to happen, right? But like, Steamer's up there.
Yeah, and we could have a whole discussion about that one, too. Yes, it is one of the biggest weeks in history. It was so big that they couldn't just do it in one night. I think Henrik or Daniel even suggested themselves that it seemed like a little much to have it over the span of a full week. It's the most humble thing. The classic Sedin response to it, by the way.
You saw what the Sedins did when they got to town, right? The first thing they went to...
They're still in town.
Well, no, they are. But like, when they got to town, what would be the first thing that the Vancouver... or what Henrik and Daniel Sedin might...
Well, they ran a marathon.
Yeah, they go and run a marathon.
Real quick off the rails moment. Yeah. I went for a run yesterday morning.
Yeah?
And it was at the same time that this marathon was happening.
Okay.
Did not see Daniel or Henrik. Let's make that clear.
Okay.
But it was a run, and I was just, like, running for the sake of running, and the route was closed off for construction, so I had no choice but to run into the marathon route with all the other people that were running. So for about 3 or 4 kilometers, I was running a marathon that I was not participant of.
Hmm. So there's all these people with numbers.
Yep, and I was the only one in the sea of runners that was not wearing one of those participation ribbon thingy-majiggies.
I wonder how many people saw you sort of come into the marathon.
Oh, they knew like from, I was legal.
Right. No, but like coming in like from the side, like you were one of those marathon runners who does that cheat their way to a win.
Yeah, they were running on the road and I was on the sidewalk and I just slowly ingratiated myself onto the road. So I blend in, you know?
Yeah.
So, no, I did not see Daniel Henriksen. I heard that their time was an hour and 20 minutes for 21 kilometers.
And then they ran up and down the Gross Grind twice.
Let me put it this way. I am a decent-ish runner. It would take me 2 hours at least to do 21K. They did it in an hour and 20. They're like 100 years old.
Oh, yeah, 100, give or take.
I might be off by a few years. But, like, the dudes are athletic freaks.
Well,
they could play right now if they wanted to.
Well, it's the story that, I think it was Jake Virtanen shared, and is that the Sedins would give the young guys a head start up the Gross Grind.
Yeah.
And, oh my goodness.
Did you see this?
Okay. What is...
Real off the rails moment. Anna sends to us in Discord a picture of her with Alex Burrows. I'll put it right now in the patron chat for those who are listening live right now. But this is some bull.
You know, she skipped out on this podcast to hang out with Burr. How rude. I would never do such a thing. Would you? Would you do such a thing?
I mean, to me, Burrows is pretty cool. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. No, he totally is. But I would, it's the listeners over Alex, for sure. I like how Anna, though, for those, again, some background here. If you're not part of our Discord, easiest way to get into it is bit.ly/C4Discord, C4Discord's all caps. For patrons, they get to tune in live, listen to the podcast. Well, Anna drops this picture in our host channel. So she didn't go and drop it for listeners.
Yep.
She was purposefully trying to rub it.
That's right. So
in.
I'm going to purposefully shame you in front of all of our patrons that are listening live on this episode, Anna. I can't believe the audacity you have to just casually drop this picture of yourself with Alex Burrows. Whatever. Let's talk about the actual ceremonies themselves.
Yeah.
Legends Night being on Monday night, of course. Wednesday night, the Vancouver Canucks will officially retire 22-33 into the rafters of Rogers Arena. And then Saturday's game will be a bit of a Sedins in the community, if you will, type of game as well. I like the concept of it. I think that it is important to stretch them over at least two games. Maybe three is a little bit of an overkill. But what do you think of the whole festivities that have been planned?
Well, I actually think the connection are right. Like, you think about it. This is not just one player being retired. It is two players being retired. It should be at least two nights in length.
Yeah.
And the fact remains the Sedins meant a lot to this organization, to this team, to this community. I mean, these guys, and it's in an era that you don't see this all that often, were drafted by the Vancouver Canucks, retired as Vancouver Canucks, and arguably were, successful throughout. Sure, they were young and they had a rough start, but based on the production that they were providing, even as these young kids, I think for us, we had set higher expectations on them than we probably should have. And then they turned into the consummate players, pros, gentlemen that they end up being. I mean, I am still upset that they didn't get a cup here in Vancouver. I mean, if there are three people that I wish got a cup in Vancouver, Lyndon, Henrik, and Daniel.
Yep. I can't argue with that.
Everyone else, I really wish, they might have had an opportunity. But those are the three that if the Vancouver Canucks were to go this season win the Stanley Cup, I'd sort of be upset that it wasn't including Trevor, Henrik, and Daniel.
Yeah. I'm really just looking forward to the whole ceremony on Wednesday, I guess. Of course, that's the pinnacle of the whole Sedin week, if you will. And I got to ask, do you think either of the Sedins show any emotion? Any of them cry? It's common
for
circumstances, of course, but I'm curious to see if they'll shed a tear or two.
I don't think they will, and I'm going to use Marcus Naslund as sort of the comparable here.
Yeah,
Nazzy, he held it together throughout the presentation, the jersey going up to the rafters.
Yeah,
I kind of think Henrik and Daniel will be able to do much the same. Now, we don't know what the presentation will be like. The Vancouver Canucks are going to give it their all. I mean, it is going to be over the top, and I truly wonder how that will have an impact. Like, what's not to say that the Vancouver Canucks organization, the players or something, were to suddenly say, hey, on behalf of the, Henrik and Daniel, we're going to have, some scholarship or some significant endowment to Canucks players. That's the stuff. It's that charity community stuff that I think could cause Henrik or Daniel to to maybe waver a little.
To borrow the reference from John Hammond of Jurassic Park, they will spare no expense for this one.
Oh, gosh, no.
So it wouldn't surprise me if the family pulls out a wild curveball that the Sedins don't know about that would break them down a little bit. But, yeah. I mean, you look at the numbers that are up there in Rogers Arena, Pavel Bure, Stan Smeal, Marcus Naslin. The Sedins, I feel, are head and shoulders above all three of those. Not to discredit those guys, but you're talking about the two greatest players, almost without a doubt, in franchise history.
Well, no, they are, without a doubt, the greatest players in franchise
history. So I just hope that they give them a ceremony that is deserving of the, without a doubt, greatest players in franchise history.
Yeah, and, you know, back to that earlier point as to, you know, Alonga going up there, you think about how the Canucks have retired jerseys. Stan Smeal got retired sort of as a building block to an older era of Canucks hockey. Trevor Linden then raised that bar significantly. He gets his jersey retired. Mm-hmm. The Pavel Bure retirement, I think, was simply, here's our first superstar. We want to recognize this. It's going to be good with the fans. Daniel and Henrik going up there, that bar is now so high.
Yeah. It's good, though, that the bar has been set higher now.
It's just it took that many jerseys to be sent to the rafters for that to happen. I mean, and I'm not trying to discount Naslin. It's
just what?
The bar continues to be raised.
Well, we've had this
based on those that go up.
And we've had this discussion and how I sort of banged on the table for Luongo to be having his number retired as well. And you know what? To be honest, having had this discussion and heard some of the feedback from others, like, I've sort of softened that stance a little bit now as a result. I do think maybe Luongo is closer to Ring of Honor than he is on jersey retirement because of the quote-unquote standard being raised a little bit higher with the Sedins there. So I think that that's probably an accurate statement. Anything else sort of on the Sedins week, if you will? I think it's cool that they're honoring them throughout the community. You never forget the $1.5 million donation that they made when they signed those big contracts. It's cool that the Legends Night will be there. Ryan Kessler will be here. We'll talk about that the next segment as well. Talk to me about your view on the Sedins. Like, do you remember where you were when Burke pulled off the trade in 99 for him at all?
Where I was, I don't remember, but I do remember that trade. Like, it's like, oh my goodness. Because even back then, the type of wheeling and dealing that Brian was performing wasn't something that occurred in the NHL to that extent. I mean, there were some crazy deals, but like, Brian went at one point, had the Vancouver Canucks sitting in the number one spot, and it's like, Canucks fans are like, oh my God, Brian Burke, he's totally, you know, building this team out. He, you know, I think we had, by then, at that point, we had fired Mike Keenan.
Yep.
I mean, Burry's got, like, Brian has come and he's doing great things. And then suddenly, oh my goodness, we have the first overall. And then to hear that he traded the first overall, and now they have second and third. Like, it's just, what the heck is going on? What is this madness? And I don't think anyone really expected that Brian was going after Henrik and Daniel. I mean, even Henrik and Daniel had a conversation with the Canucks, but neither one of them had even got a hint that there was a possibility they would play together. They'd accepted, well, good
this
luck.
This is it. The gravy train was over. They had played together up until that point in their careers, and they knew that the inevitability of being drafted in the NHL meant that they were likely going to start on separate NHL teams. Maybe there was a point where they thought to themselves, we could one day reunite, but I don't think either of them thought at the outset of their careers that they would be able to play on a line together or at least continue.
Yeah, and the discussions that they had with teams, at no point in time did any team suggest it was possible. In fact, the conversation is, hey, it's not possible. Maybe it's not even like we'd like to do it. We're not even considering it because why would any team think to make this happen?
But Brian Burke did. And for me at that point, like, that was, first of all, my first real experience in the actual trade market as a Canucks fan. Like, that was the trade that let me know about how real trades could be in the NHL. And for me, that was also the moment Brian Burke was able to really put his stamp on that team, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was in his sort of infancy of his general manager tenure with the Canucks, and that was that real big, like, here we go moment for Brian Burke, I thought. And I think it was a gamble that he knew at the time was a big gamble, because you never know when you make a trade of that kind of magnitude. But to trade Brian McCabe and a future first for the third overall pick, I believe, if you will, that was a massive gamble at the time, and he did not know if that was going to pay off.
Well, I mean, think about it. We've talked about draft picks on this podcast many, many times previous. It is ultimately a roll of the dice. There are very few opportunities where you get a sure thing, We're talking one sure thing.
But Brian Burke at the time saw the Twins as like, these are two players who could be cornerstone frontline players for us one day. Mm-hmm. And I think that that trade was very ballsy. I don't think there are many NHL GMs at the time who would have even considered that kind of possibility.
Well, no, because why would you take the risk of having to roll the dice twice? Because that's what you were doing. Yeah. You were taking both players in the hope that both will be transformative for your organization. I mean, it's unheard of. I don't imagine it will ever occur again. You could have some new Sedins exist, and I don't think any team goes and leverages that much risk, hoping that it'll pay out.
I'm trying to think. I remember Patrick Steffen was number one in that draft. I can't even remember who was number four.
Don't ask me. I'd have to go look it up. If you'd like to, I can.
No, I think I got it. I think it was Pavel Brendl. No. Tampa Bay. I think Tampa Bay had number four. I don't know now. Maybe New York had four. Do you know it?
Okay, so I've gone and I've looked it up.
Is Pavel Brendl in that year?
Pavel Brendl, number four.
Yes!
Number five was Tim Connolly.
Oh, God. Buffalo? Or was that the Islanders?
Islanders.
It was the Islanders, yeah.
The immortal Brian Finley was number six.
Never played a game in the NHL, if I remember correctly.
Chris Beach, number seven.
One-time Canuck Chris Beach. You remember that guy?
Yeah, and guess who was number eight? Taylor Pyatt.
Who drafted Pyatt?
Islanders. From okay. L.A. Jamie Lundmark was drafted by New York and the Rangers. And then number 10?
Just give me the team name.
Well, it's New York Islanders. The Islanders had a bunch of picks because
they had a lot of picks in that top 10.
Weren't they involved in the Sedins trade? I mean, I can go look that up, too. But they the Islanders drafted Branislav
Mazey, defenseman, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I'm looking at just this draft.
That 99 draft was woof.
There,
Buzz, your girlfriend, woof.
Martin Havlat, number 26.
That was a bad draft, man. So in redraft in 99, the Sedins obviously go 1-2, right?
Oh, they go 1-1, man. Like that.
I believe, wasn't Zetterberg in that draft year, though?
Oh, he might have been.
I think he was like a late
I'd
round
have to,
pick.
I'd have to go way down.
You do a real quick scroll, but I mean, man, that was a real roll of the dice.
Canucks legend Alex Auld, number 40, drafted by the Panthers. Future Uber driver Mike Commodore was 42.
Future Uber driver.
He does drive Uber.
I know. So obviously we know about the early season struggles for the Sedins, at least in the early part of their careers. For me, I think the turning point for them to actually become real good players was the NHL lockout in 2004.
Well, yeah, and I don't know if you caught After Hours this weekend.
I did not.
Okay, so they had Marcus Naslund on, they asked him, about the Sedins, and Marcus had said, the lockout itself wasn't really a good thing, but it provided the Sedins an opportunity to go back to Sweden.
Regain their confidence?
Regain their confidence, almost find their game,
yep.
And then they grew as professionals so that when they came back to Vancouver, they were able to take that opportunity and make something of it.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of truth to stuff like that, in the NHL, a lot of success can hinge on something as small as confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for the Sedins at the time in 2004 to go back to Sweden, rediscover the roots, if you will, rediscover their confidence and realize that, we're still good hockey players. I think that was actually really important to the rest of their success that they had. You might argue that without that NHL lockout, that lost season, the Sedins might not have turned out to be the way that they did.
Well, Scott Oak had actually asked Marcus, did you know that the Daniel and Henrik were considering just stopping and leaving the NHL?
Right.
And Marcus I wasn't aware of that. But you think about it, the pressure that the Sedins had coming to a hockey-mad market like Vancouver.
Yep.
I mean, for all the shots Vancouver takes, we are hockey-mad. And being expected to be to use a more recent example, it'd be like Connor McDavid and Connor McDavid's clone.
Right.
Like that was the level of expectation placed on them, that they were going to be transformative from day one. They weren't. They were good hockey players. They were trending towards great, but it wasn't until, that lost season, the opportunity to get that confidence in Sweden, coming back to the NHL, to then start to essentially take the pressure off of the likes of a Marcus Naslund, a Brendan Morrison, Todd Bertuzzi, like the top line.
I got a trivia question for you.
42.
No.
I knew I'd get it wrong.
Which Sedin linemate came first, Jason King or Anson Carter?
I was going to say Anson Carter.
No, it was Jason King.
Really?
2003-2004, Jason King. Okay. 12 goals in 67 games, that Rookie of the Month honors in October that we all remember, and then it was Anson Carter post-lockout, 2007.
I thought it was Carter. I thought the mattress line was after Carter. Because I mean, Carter is the first, when you think about Sedin linemates, Carter was the first one that in my mind resonates, because boy, did Anson turn that into money.
Yeah. And of course, the OG Sedin linemate, if you will,
Andrew
is...
Andrew Castles?
No.
No?
Come on, Trent Klatt.
Oh, yeah. But that, okay. Yeah, sorry.
I mean, if you...
I was trying to think of the era.
There are several, like, OG...
I guess Castles would have been a center, though.
Yeah, so Castles was probably used quite sparingly. Mm. But I always looked at Trent Klatt as the first original Sedin linemate. Yeah. Anson Carter, of course, came around. Is Anson Carter the best linemate of the Sedins of all time? Like, let's talk, like, on a pure, with a sample size of what you had... If Anson Carter had re-upped with the Canucks, in a hypothetical world, in a hypothetical world where Anson Carter re-ups with the Sedins, does he continue that success he had in that 1 year, 33 goals, 22 assists?
Arguably. I don't even know if it's arguably. I think Anson Carter does continue the success. I mean, the running joke at the time was you could put a pylon with the Sedins, and the pylon would put up points.
But for some reason, Anson Carter found that success.
Well, he did, and he wasn't able to translate it anywhere else outside of the fact that he had, you know, two of the premier NHL players. But if Anson Carter continues to play with the Sedins, he comes back to the Canucks on a contract, there is this trickle-down effect with reality that then tells you that another player, one that Anna apparently is best friends with, doesn't get an opportunity to play with the Sedins. And transformatively to him and his game becomes a... premier player in the NHL. Yeah. I mean, there's just so much craziness that starts to occur.
You know what I feel like we're doing right now?
What are we doing here?
I feel like we're in the DeLorean right now, and we went back to 1950, and we're like doing things that are splitting off a separate time.
Doc Brown is like freaking out right now. Yeah. Like, you know.
That's pretty cool. But I mean, it's
great,
all
Scott.
It's really interesting, I think, to debate the what ifs, if you will. Like, if Anson Carter obviously signed up, like, did you read the Athletic sit down with Mike Gillis where he talked about how they used analytics essentially to identify the perfect linemate for the Sedins?
I did
that
not.
Ultimately did not come to fruition.
I did not. But I know that the what was the player's name that they had?
Michael Ryder.
Yes.
So that was the guy, the best player that they ended up not signing, but they wanted to really sign because they identified that this was going to be the guy who would find the most success with the Sedins. And then Burrows was actually plan B.
Yeah, it was a good plan B. I mean,
well, Michael Ryder went on to win a cup with the Bruins in 2011. So
what you're saying is that ultimately needs to be reversed. Ryder is a Canuck and there'd be a cup in town. Is that what you're trying to imply?
I'm not saying either or, but it's all food for thought.
I can't get a line on a DeLorean, but would a Tesla work? Throw a flux
I'm sure Elon Musk has been working on time space continuums.
Probably. That and flamethrowers.
Best Sedin moments of the 2010s era.
Oh.
What sticks out for you?
The shift.
Which one? The one against Edmonton?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, there was a few, but the Edmonton, that was the original shift.
Yeah.
Right? Where the Sedins had, like, the puck taped to their stick.
For, like, 2 minutes.
And if anything, it was kind of on a string. And
I don't remember who else was on the ice that shift.
Well, I think...
Edler was definitely
out
there.
Yeah, but I also think it wasn't just the Sedins. I believe the Canucks actually were able to, change lines two or three times during that shift. Because it was, like, 2 minutes and some odd seconds. And
I need to rewatch that one.
I remember watching it. It's like, okay, so the Vancouver Canucks are going to score. It's kind of like, you know, lions toying with their prey. Like, you know the inevitable is going to occur, but it's sweeps week, so you got to, like, stretch it out as long as you can.
Edmonton was also really bad at that time, too. Like, they were not the best.
I was going to say, because I want to say that was during the era where we saw some really good games between the Oilers and Canucks.
That
and
was,
Flames,
I
Canucks.
Believe it was, like, the year after they went to the Stanley Cup Finals, and they just...
Anyhow, and the shift is my mind, the biggest one. I could also say it's the, you know, quadruple overtime, the Sedins game against Dallas.
Game one.
I mean, that was a crazy game all different ways. Being
Frick,
in the rink
that
was
game
phenomenal.
Ended. You were at that game, right?
I was at that game.
I remember you talking about this. That game ended at like midnight local time, didn't it?
Or oh, after midnight. Buses were no longer running because...
How did you get home that night?
Marnie had to come from Richmond, drive downtown, pick me and my friend up to get us home. And then I flew out to Calgary on like a 6 a.m. flight.
Hashtag worth it.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't change a thing. Outside of the fact I get to the office in Calgary the following day, and I got no voice because I left that in the rudge.
My other favorite memory that you haven't mentioned since you've stolen so many already.
Yeah, that's what I do.
The good one was the Henrik between the legs pass to Daniel between the legs goal against Calgary. Yeah, yeah. I think that was in 2010.
Might have been.
It was the year before 2011.
The last game of the season.
Yeah,
because it would have been about. Would it have been 2010? Because it was a year that you had Henrik and Daniel essentially, you know, competing with each other.
I'm pretty sure that was 2010. I don't know if we will ever see something like that again.
Well, maybe not twice, but that I could see Petey doing something.
But you talk about like real twin magic. Like I think a lot of people like we're starting to hear some of those stories about how the Canucks operated as twins. But that was a real like. You can't do this unless you're a twins type of play.
Yes, that's a great. I full on agree there. But I can see if it was a one player situation, like that type of goal. Oh, I could totally see Petey trying to pull that. I mean, I'm half expecting we're going to see a lacrosse style goal from Petey.
Yeah, I mean, those were some of my favorite moments. Of course, the Sedins winning back to back Art Ross trophies and the Hart Trophy and stuff like that. That's all cool. And the President's Trophy and the Stanley Cup Final. We can talk about that. And the disappointment of not sort of winning the Stanley Cup. By the way, Kess and Juice podcast. They talked about how players fighting that don't normally fight that would get them jacked up. I wonder.
Well, Daniel Sedin did get a 5-minute major for fighting in his NHL career.
Ooh.
And it was like one of those like end of game where the Zebras just start handing out the fives.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't a real fight.
No, then. But he was like I remember watching it live, and he was fired up. Like if there was ever going to be an opportunity for Daniel to fight, it was that night. It's just I don't think anyone had ever sat him down to explain the mechanics of what you needed to actually do to accomplish such a fight. And nothing came out of it. But yeah, he did get, I'm positive he got 5 for fighting. He didn't get like a 10 misconduct or
anything. I need
silly.
To look this up. I feel like I never saw bear witness to this.
The Sedins
never actually fought in their careers, though.
No,
right?
Like it wasn't, he got, but it was essentially where the Zebras are just,
yeah.
You know, evening things up.
Interesting.
It was a late game.
I feel like if one of them ever fought, the other would fight just to try and one up the other.
Well, yeah. Well, exactly. It was a competition. Everything was a competition. Like you were to ask them, "Oh, who is the? Whoops, hit the mic. Who is the better player?" They would obviously tell you it was themselves and give you all of the reasons why their brother was not it.
Yeah, I mean. You grew up with a brother as well. Mm-hmm. Did you guys ever play on the same team for sports?
7-year difference, no. Well, okay. I mean, once we got into like adult rec league soccer.
See, like I grew up playing hockey with my cousin. He's like 2 years older. And there is definitely truth to the fact that if you were, if you're like sibling or related by blood, like you push that person extra harder because that's your sibling or your relative.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I'm just loving all the stories that we're seeing that's coming out of the woodwork about how the Sedins just pushed each other because of the fact that they were twins. And that sort of has a trickle-down effect on the rest of the team. So the standard that they've set for both pursuing excellence on the ice and off the ice has made its way into this new generation of players, and it's kind of cool that that sort of legacy is being passed on to this new generation of Canuck players. So that's cool to see. I don't know. I'm really excited for the whole week of Sedin festivities. It's well deserved. I don't know if I will get emotional, to be honest.
I'm gonna enjoy it. I don't think I'll get emotional. It's not.
But you mentioned how like the three players you wanted to see win a Stanley Cup, like Sedins are two of the three.
They are, but like I mean, it's like the if you haven't seen it, the Budweiser commercial. I mean, the Budweiser commercial that started to pull on strings because of who they have talking about Henrik and Daniel.
Yeah,
and it actually goes to brand. Like we talked a little bit earlier about the donation that they made to the Children's Hospital.
Yep,
they did not want that to be public.
Yeah.
Like, they wanted that to be completely anonymous. They wanted no one to know.
Classic Sedin's.
And not only were the Canucks trying to explain, like, no, the people should know this. The Children's Hospital was like, yeah, no, people need to know this. Like, this is no small, oh, you gave us $25 on Blue Jeans Day. It was a significant donation, and Henrik and Daniel would have much preferred that would have been lost to, you know,
The abyss of news.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's the type of guys these are. So, I mean, it's that type of story, which is why I think goes back to where it might get them to become emotional. And I will concede that might be the one space that I might get a little dust in the eye.
One of those better, good, great players, better people type of stories.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Question for you, only because you put it in the rundown. Hockey Hall of Fame. These two guys get in?
They're not first ballot Hall of Famers, but I think at some point they will get in. It might be a bit of a wait. Well, but they will obviously get in together.
So, okay, but, I mean, Pavel Bure, he's in there, right?
He had a wait, though.
No, I know, but, like, if Pavel Bure can get there even with the wait, I think...
Like, Dave Andrejczyk recently got in, and he had to endure a long wait, too. Larry Walker got in. Major League Baseball. He had a wait.
Yeah, but Larry Walker, if it wasn't for the fact that he
played for the Rockies,
I mean, that was what was holding it back, is the air in Colorado was perceived to be his advantage. And what's so stupid about this, don't get me fired up about it, is that Larry Walker played in essentially the steroid era, the asterisk era, and there are people who outright juiced in the Hall of Fame, but no, because he plays in Colorado, we're going to go and punish him for it. Yeah. Baseball is stupid.
You're not wrong.
No. Anyhow, no, Sedin's, I think they are. I don't agree.
Are they first ballot, though?
I don't think they're first ballot. And
they might have to wait a few years, I think.
I think maybe two.
But, like, for you, they're locks for the Hall of Fame, though.
If they're not, like, I don't understand the logic. If it was like, oh, they didn't win a cup. And this is where I think old hockey people start to get in the way of the actual game. They'll be like, oh, they didn't win a cup. Oh, they're two players. So they're really, their accolades should be, you know, cut in half or reduced because, right. When one got a point, the other got a point. So are you going to tell me that, like, a Wayne Gretzky and a Jari Kurri aren't two people? Like, almost any time Kurri got a point, Gretzky got a point. Gretzky got a point, Kurri got a point. Like, hell, put Messier, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point in time, into the mix. Like, again, that makes no sense. But because it's Henrik and Daniel, somehow being two separate players is a punishment. Yeah. I get a little angry here.
Anyway, Sedin Week, we're looking forward to the festivities. Hope everyone enjoys it. Talking about the other players who are in attendance for Sedin Week, coming up next, C4 Podcast, CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
He liked to say the F word.
Oh, then get the f*** here then. Okay, see ya.
He's going to have the F word on it.
I wish I could give you a explanation about it. I can't.
You f*** out of here.
You said the F word, Dad.
You called me the F word.
I'm actually impressed that you got the right segment in at the right time.
Practice makes perfect, baby.
It's only taking you how many years?
Whatever. I think Anna and I had debated the merits of this, so I want to let you have your say on it. Ryan Kesler showing up tonight at Rogers Arena for the first time in a non-player role. What is the reaction he gets? Obviously, hindsight's going to be 20/20, but do they boo him or cheer him largely?
So, I think he gets cheered. And the problem is that,
like, Stone Cold Steve Austin heel turn cheered, or just like resounding cheered?
No, I think it's the heel turn cheer here. It's like, you know, Stone Cold coming out and saving Stephanie McMahon from the Undertaker.
Right.
Like, bad guy, but there's a badder guy. So,
yeah.
You know, that it. For people who don't know WWE
history. No, they'll get it.
But I actually asked myself this question, and my answer that I eventually came around to is that I don't care enough about the reasons why he left the team So the, why would I care enough to
boo or cheer him?
Right. Like, I think he, in the era that he was part of and the effort that he provided the Vancouver Canucks, I mean, at 2011, that Nashville series.
We don't get to the finals without Ryan Kessler.
Yeah, Ryan Kessler decided he wanted to get to a Stanley Cup final. So come hell or high water, he made that happen, right? Like, it occurs to me that we, in this market, maybe it's something happens in other markets I'm just not aware of, we discount a player's desire to win. I mean, when did Ryan leave? Ryan left when the team was trending the wrong direction. Yeah. He wanted to win. And yet, for us, we'll look at a Kevin Bieksa who publicly says, I'm going to go down with this ship, and like we'll applaud him. But then like a Ryan Kessler is like, no, I want to get out and I want to win. We almost castigate. Bure is another example because the Canucks were taking Bure to the cleaners at the time. They were screwing around and messing with his contract. And he decided he wanted out. And yet we as a fan base were livid with him. Granted, we didn't know the whole story at the time. But yeah, I've come to the belief that, you know, enough time has passed, good points have raised, and I am perfectly fine supporting him. Now, the argument goes to get a ring of honor, and I'm less enthused. I think there are much more deserving people from that era.
Okay, let's hear it.
Roberto Luongo, for one.
Alex Edler?
Oh, Edler, I think so, yeah. I mean, the career that he has had.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there are...
Those guys would all make it before Ryan Kessler.
Right. And that's a problem. Ryan Kessler, for all that he did for the Vancouver Canucks, a Selke winner.
Yeah.
Right? Can't spell
the
Selke.
The only Selke winner.
Kessler. Like, the point remains, I think he deserves some recognition, but...
Not quite to the effect of Ring of Honor.
Because... As I earlier alluded to, the Vancouver Canucks, over time, are starting to raise this bar
based
on further and further,
I mean,
you know, elevation of players.
Look, I know he's before my time, but Harold Snaps is in the Ring of Honor.
Well, Snaps defined a blue line era. Like, I grew up with Harold Snaps. Like, I remember going to the Pacific
Thomas
Coliseum.
Thomas Gradin is in the Ring of Honor.
Harold. But, like, Thomas Gradin was a phenomenal player. Like, there are...
But Ryan Kessler was, too.
Right, but the bar has gone up. If Ryan Kessler played in that era, his name would be up there. Ryan Kessler played in an era where there were really good players around him.
I don't know.
And players who, quite frankly, deserve it just a little bit more. Now, does that mean he shouldn't be up there? Well, if there was an unlimited amount of space, sure, throw his name up there and slap a profile picture. But I'm just, you know, good on you, Ryan. Now, could I... change my opinion on this, I could be led to the other side, but it would take time, it'd take effort, and I need more to see about Ryan doing something within the community to make that happen.
Tell me I'm wrong.
You're wrong.
Ryan Kessler, while the Sedins were driving the bus in the 2010s, Ryan Kessler was the engine of that team, the emotional heartbeat of that team.
Oh, yeah, and he wore it on his sleeve.
He did.
He was the power forward, and he, you know, he had the growl. Like, you think back to a few years earlier, the Blues series.
The catchphrase was he had the swagger
that
the Canucks needed in 2011 to be a successful team.
Yeah, but I am not discounting that.
I don't, like... You mentioned, like, Gradin and Steps. Like, it boggles my mind.
You're comparing two different eras.
I know I'm comparing two different eras, Chris, but, like, Ryan Kessler delivered 40-goal seasons for the Canucks. He won a Selke Trophy.
Okay, so...
And while playing against the team's top competition every night.
So Roberto Luongo doesn't go up there?
I'm not saying Luongo doesn't go up there. I think Luongo gets up there, too, but, like, I think Alex Edler gets up there, too, but I think that Kessler deserves to be in the same hemisphere as those guys.
You're not wrong, but the difficulty is there's only, so much space, both literally but then figuratively, and Kessler, quite frankly, didn't do himself any favors.
I know.
On his way out the door. Like, I am so sorry that is the reality of the situation. That does not take away from his accolades in a Vancouver Canuck uniform, but he peaced out. And unfortunately, you pay a penance. Now, the thing that I also don't agree with is Pavel Bure getting his jersey retired, but that's an entirely different story.
Uh-huh.
And that, for me, is the struggle. So, back to your point. Thomas Gradin, Harold Sneps, Kirk McLean,
yeah,
Orland Kurtenbach. Isn't Darcy Rhode up there?
No, Darcy Rhode is not up there.
But you know what I mean, right? Like, you'd have to take one of those names down, because if you're going to go and say Kessler should be up there because those guys shouldn't be, then okay, take them down.
Matias Olin's also up there, by the way.
Yeah, but we wouldn't question Matias. You know who should be up there? Christian Ehrhoff.
All right, now you're just getting crazy.
Hey, Canucks loved the his services played, on the blue line. Okay,
Ehrhoff played 2 years, I think, with Vancouver tops. Maybe three. But the point is, like, Kessler was here for what? 10 years?
He came up through the system.
A first-round pick? Gave his body, he did, literally, for this team to win games.
He did.
I don't know. I
just, you know what? Let's just put, instead of individual players, let's just put 2011 Vancouver Canucks and the logo in the Ring of Honor.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I digress. I mean, I feel like we will have this debate for
if there's anything
years.
I know about you, you'll bring it up like every second episode.
This is my new cap recapture.
That's my soapbox.
Yeah. Take a break. Coming back, talking about the actual current Canucks here on the C4 Podcast, CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Is that because he was mad?
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
So before we get into the Kirk Canucks, just one final thing from the network. So Trevor Linden is in town. He said he would be, and he will be here.
Right.
There was a question from Rob the Hockey Guy on Twitter today about, you know, based on his sort of exit from the team and how he sort of been not in it, like, will Canucks fans, you know, cheer him? And I read this. I'm like, okay, seriously, this is, I think, what's called a wind-up merchant. But I retweeted his tweet. And I know Rob wasn't trying to...
Oh, you poked the bear, didn't you?
But I'm like, Trevor Linden could don a Mark Messier jersey. And while there would be gasps, people would be like, oh, well, it's Trev. He's good. I mean, that guy's got, like, enough credit in the bank that he could go and start managing the Boston Bruins, and Canucks fans will be, yeah, no problem. Am I wrong here? Like, Trevor's pretty much got a key to the city.
I don't disagree. That said, I said it from day one when the Canucks hired him as president of hockey ops, that there was a no-win situation here for Trevor Linden.
Oh, yeah. And
it did smudge the legacy, if you will, just a little bit.
Yeah, but no, he had, like, a little bit.
He will always be Vancouver's golden child.
Yeah, it's...
But when you enter a role like that, like a no-win scenario type of role, like, of course it's going to bring a couple questions about you.
But that, even then, it's the not equivalent, even a question.
Never mind, I'm not going to use
it. Just buff it out.
Yeah.
Current Vancouver Canucks.
You want to talk about the Linden thing? Well, let's talk about the Linden thing just a little bit more.
Okay, fine.
I feel like he is only here because the Sedins wanted him here. If the Sedins didn't personally say, Trevor, we need you there, he would not be here.
What, as president? Or no, you mean tonight?
For the whole ceremony
this week, sorry. No, I think Trevor would have been here for this. Regardless of whatever the situation might be, I think he prioritizes the legacy of the Canucks as an organization.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one thing about an era night. Like, okay, yeah, that's kind of weird, but there is no way he would go and do a disservice to players like Henrik and Daniel.
Yeah.
They don't have to ask. He would show up.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like he's only here because the Sedins asked him. He would stick it to the family as much as he could.
Do you think the Sedins would have to ask him? You think the Sedins would have to ask Trevor Linden to, hey, come to our night, please? For Trevor Linden?
Well, I heard the Sedins were asking a lot of players and personnel to be able to, like, Mike Bernstein's leaving the Vancouver Giants so he can be in attendance.
Well, no. And that's
Alex, like, Burrow's got granted leave from the Laval Rocket.
That's different. Okay, it's one thing for the Sedins to go and say, we want these people who matter to us here. That I'm not saying that may not have
Linden's
happened.
But Linden's not tied up to something is what you're
saying. No, but even then, like, there would have to have been a very compelling reason for Linden not to be here. That he's on the
out of town, like they've been using all
on
year.
The International Space Station.
He could be. He has been spending a lot of time in the lab.
But, you know, Trevor would not have gone, and whether or not there's a beef with the family, you know, had the Sedins.
There's beef, though. We know that, right?
Whatever.
Okay, so you're just dodging it. You know there's beef. Linden's got beef with the family.
Linden would not hurt the Sedins through collateral damage based on an alleged beef with the family.
I like how you use the word alleged.
Mm-hmm.
You've been taking my PR lessons, finally.
You have PR lessons to give? I find it funny that your day job gets you in front of the radio. Anyhow.
Anyway, let's talk about the current Canucks. Have you watched the last couple games? Obviously, they've been very disappointing results for them.
I have. It has been tough.
Can we acknowledge Elias Pettersson is clearly less than 100%?
Oh, most definitely. And less than 100% and getting absolutely no quarter on the ice. We're watching playoff hockey and the playoffs haven't even started.
Michael Backlund, was it a slew foot?
Okay, I watched it slowly.
It looks bad, does it not?
And it's like, okay, at first I'm like, I don't think it's a slew foot. I think it's an unfortunate series
of
events.
There was a distinct attempt.
Well, no, but then when I look again, you can see his leg move forward. Like, I thought it was just like, you know, a more of a collision, two players occupying the same space. But you can see the leg going forward. Like, it doesn't look
good. It looks bad,
good.
Man. I didn't like that at all. But I don't like the cross checks in the back well after the puck is gone. I don't like any of it.
Well, the thing about Pettersson is it doesn't occur to me that he's looking for calls. Like, he goes down, he gets up, dusts himself off, and gets back in the game.
And he's actually kind of whacking back a little bit, too.
Well, the Backlund one, he took a baseball swing.
He was mad.
Like, that was... I mean,
that
the
was
fact
Pettersson
that,
death stare and the whack all in one.
The fact that the officials don't throw up an arm for that swing.
They knew they messed up.
Yeah, that's like, oh, yeah, we did an oopsie there. And now we're just going to let the two things happen because they're equal. But the difficulty is that PD is being put into this position that he is getting slowed down, clutched, grabbed, hacked, slashed. And teams are seeing that they can get away with it. So every single night. I feel if he needs to take time to get better, give him the time. The problem is the Vancouver Canucks are deep in the playoff hunt.
Yeah, we don't have the luxury, if you will, of sitting Pettersson down at this point.
Not with Brock Besser currently on the shelf for at least a week because he got placed on the IR.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
I thought he was sitting the next two games.
Well, so he got placed on IR, and if I understand correctly, that is a one-week timeout minimum.
But can they do it retroactive, though, to the Saturday?
I don't know if it was done retroactively. Like, maybe it was, but the point being is, I mean...
Wouldn't that make them eligible for Saturday, though, if they were?
Saturday? Yeah, maybe. I mean,
because they knew that they was missing the next two games.
Yeah, well, I mean, okay, so if it's the next two games retroactive, it's a week. But when you put a player on the shelf, you actually put them on the IR. You're doing it for a number of reasons. One, cap management. Two, roster spot. Like, when there was a debate in Gate 16 today about whether or not that spot gets used, this is someone being called up. Why put them on the IR? Like, I don't think Vancouver Canucks are high enough to the cap ceiling for them to have gotten, you know, LTIR relief.
Yeah.
On it. I mean, it's
probably not.
So it meant more roster management.
The point is, though, that they don't have the luxury to sit down Pettersson when Besser's on the shelf. I don't know. But getting back to the refereeing, like, yeah, it's frustrating. The goalposts, as they have said, have moved in terms of refereeing. I don't know. Like, I don't know what you do if you're the Vancouver Canucks. Do you hope that Michael Ferland comes back and the Canucks police themselves?
I'm not sure. There's a dude over there who's wearing one shoe looking at books and the other shoe's in his hand. So some things just don't make sense in this world.
He can't get in here, right?
I don't think so.
Questionable.
You know, he was
looking
at books
through doors.
For politics.
Be cool,
and government.
be cool.
What do the Canucks do? I don't know. Like, I like seeing the Vancouver Canucks looking like, I mean, Jake, for instance, getting involved and that, but
the one shoe guy's walking around again.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is, I don't know, like, I do not want to see a reoccurrence of 2011 where the Canucks are just getting bullied on the ice by their opponents.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's Roussel, whether it's Ferland, whether it's, as Nexus put it just now, you know, Pettersson Bure to Cherlaing this player on his own.
But that's the risk, right? Does a Vancouver Canuck player then cross the line? I mean, Bure to Cherla is a whole different era.
Oh.
Imagine if that were to happen in today's game. Like,
ask Shane Cherla what he remembers. Probably not much from that elbow.
No, not at all. And what did Bure get?
He got a game for it?
Okay, I was going to say, because when I remember...
The rest of the game and another game.
Yeah, I was watching a replay of it, and it was brutal. I mean, Bure knew how to stand up for himself.
The point is, like, I just do not, like, the Canucks need to do something. They can't let this continue. Sure, they can say verbally and after the game how frustrated they are with the refereeing. That's natural, I think. But the Vancouver Canucks need to do something to make sure that this doesn't become a thing, that they're not being targeted by other NHL teams. I don't like this. Like, there are lessons learned from that 2011 year.
That's the problem, though, is, like, what did we love about the Vancouver Canucks in 2011? We love the fact
they played
a high-skill game.
Yeah.
And I love high-skill hockey. I like big hits like the next guy. I love the heavier game. But if you had me choose between high-skill, fast-paced hockey and clutch-and-grab, slow-down hockey, I'm choosing high-skill, fast-paced all the time. I don't care if it's 10-9 final
But how
score.
Are we going to get fast-paced high-skill hockey if Pettersson's getting clutched, grabbed,
and attacked?
Well,
no, we're not. This is the problem. This is one of the reasons why I find that I lose interest with the NHL as it gets closer to playoff time is, one, if the team that I cheer and support for, the Vancouver Canucks, don't look like they're going to be in the playoffs, I lose interest because there's really no good hockey to watch anymore in my mind. I don't want to watch hockey for the sake of watching hockey.
Yeah. Anyway, I just feel that, like, I feel for Pettersson because he is getting clutched, grabbing, and he's clearly getting frustrated. He's hurt. He's banged up. This team, I don't feel that the injuries change my outlook on how, if this team makes or misses the playoffs. I still think that they're going to make the playoffs just by virtue of
the Pacific
just being bad. So, I don't know. I would just like to see, if anything, the Canucks just harden up without sounding too much like an old-school hockey guy.
Harden up as in someone comes and drops the gloves the moment, you know, PD has someone break wind on them?
Well, I mean, if we've learned anything so far from the Battle of Alberta between Edmonton and Calgary, it's that teams do stiffen up when the going does get tough, and I hope that the Canucks do the same if it gets to that. And clearly it's been getting to that a little bit more lately.
But the difficulty, the Battle of Alberta is a battle that happens a handful times a season. The Vancouver Canucks see a team come through town that they may not see again. So, like, the problem is there isn't this, risk of retribution. And I know that's not the most appropriate word to use here in Vancouver for obvious reasons. I don't know what the solution is. I actually feel that the NHL itself needs to give themselves a hard look to say, what type of game do we want, and simply accept it. I mean, if there's anything, it's the slow, clutching, grabbing, interference stuff. Like, hell, you know, just call everything. Players will adapt, players will learn. We hear this all the time. I think it's true. But the problem is the officials don't want to have an impact on tight playoff races or a tight playoff series, and by not having an impact, they ensure they have an impact.
Yeah. Chris, as we wrap things up here on the C4 podcast, how about you tell people where they can find us?
Well, thank you if you're already listening to us, because that means you somehow stumbled across our humble podcast, either because you've been listening to us for a long time or you happen to tune in for the very first. If you are curious, though, where to find everyone, heading to c4podcast.com is the easiest way to find us online. We are on CanucksHockeyBlog.com, but again, c4podcast.com just gets it all of our episodes. We are in every major podcast app that is out there. So I would encourage you to subscribe if you haven't done so already. It would mean a lot to us. And as far as social media is concerned, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/C4podcast and on Twitter at the C4podcast. And remember, all witty commentary on Facebook and Twitter are from Anna, and if it's the boring, usual drivel, that means it's from me.
You are boring.
Yeah, I'm old. It comes with the territory. I like how, you know, I'm not here, and it's like the old jokes, the
We only dish it out when you're not here.
Yeah, but when I'm here, it's like you don't have the stones to say it to my face.
You want me to say it?
Yeah, say it.
You want me to say it? You're old.
Thank you.
You're old.
I appreciate that.
You're at least 40.
More.
You 40?
I'm over 40, man.
You old.
I am old. Like, I'm 40. In
Should only, we put you in the Ring of Honor?
In only just over a week's time, I'm 42.
You old? We can put you in the Ring of Honor.
I'm
still in the prime of life, baby.
At this point, you know.
Frontline center.
You put me in a retirement home. That's where you need to put me.
You want to come out to the alumni games for the Canucks? Suit it up?
I should. They should invite me to the
you
alumni
suite. You can be Dave Babich's stunt double.
Where's the Canucks social media alumni suite? Because I should pretty much be part of that association.
Yeah, they're in the geriatric ward.
Yeah.
See? Old jokes.
Yeah. As a reminder, we will not be here next week because it is a holiday for us here in BC. It's family day for those of you who aren't in BC and celebrating a holiday of some sort in
Isn't
other
it
parts
also
of
family
Canada.
Day in Alberta?
In Alberta. But like, I think every province sort of does things differently.
Classic BC. Can't figure it out.
Well, for a while, our family day was the week before everyone else's holiday because BC thought it was real smart to like do it out of sync. But we're now in line with the other February holidays here in Canada. And if you happen to be somewhere in another part of the world, if you have the day off, great, enjoy it. If not, I am so sorry, but we'll be back 2 weeks later. You're all upset there, Matt, because I'm trying to tell everyone where to find us and appreciate the fact that our listeners tune in each and every week and our patrons who join
I'm trying to think of more old jokes before we go.
Okay, fine, whatever. Think. If you're looking for Adam, it's Adam or FOC, and Anna is A4Sites03 on Twitter. Matt Lee is at Matt Lee _61. I'm Chris at Lightfor. So we finally reached that point, Matt. Any final words of wisdom or old jokes?
Ooh, on the spot here.
Mm-hmm.
I got nothing. Looking forward to the tweet up. February 28th, Jaggers, 29th, downtown.
29th.
February 29th.
And
okay?
The Canucks are playing the Leafs in Toronto.
4 p.m. start.
Because it's in Toronto. They already had Toronto
It'd
out
be
here.
4 p.m. if it was here.
Yeah, on a Saturday for sure. The fact it wasn't at 4 p.m. on a midweek game blew my mind. I wasn't entirely sure what was happening. I didn't realize the Leafs could play at 7 o'clock in Western Canada, but they did. So, as far as me, thanks for tuning in to those who support us through Patreon in Patreon chat. We will be back in 2 weeks' time. For those of you who are listening to us everywhere else, enjoy the rest of your week. Hopefully, you get to take in the Vancouver Canucks, Fedin, Daniel Sedin, and Henrik Sedin, and doing it right. So on behalf of Anna, Adam, Matt, and myself, I'm going to end this podcast with those magical two words, we're out.